Hey y'all, you're listening to Naptime Investigations, a true crime podcast. What we're about to discuss is likely disturbing and contains mature content with the use of adult language and the occasional mom joke. Listener discretion is advised.
You can find us on Facebook or Instagram at Naptime Investigations or Twitter at Naptime_podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Taylor. We're just a couple of internet mom friends who like to talk about true crime and conspiracies when we can get our children to sleep.
Thanks for being our kind of person and joining us to talk about what normal people think isn't appropriate for small talk. Hey!
Okay, we're recording. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. After this case is done, it's naptime nightmares. Our 13 days of nightmares. So be on the lookout for that. It starts on the 19th.
Yeah,
19th. So well, our very first episode of 13 will be out on the 19th. And yeah, it's going to be great. I'm very excited. Our episodes have been like so randomly gone out. Life has been fucking wild lately.
Girl. Life is challenging.
Pure insanity. Let's be real about that,
dude. So like, you get what you get, man. But
we're here. We're doing our best.
Yeah.
But
if you want to help us?
Help us.
Yeah.
Help.
Research. Edit.
Case suggestions.
Yeah.
Case suggestions really help because it kind of gives us a starting point. And I think that's probably the hardest thing for this podcast is finding cases to talk about. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So my big thing is like, there's so many cases that are so overdone by people who do listen to true crime podcasts. That
right.
I don't want to do another, like, I'm trying to think of one that, like, Lacey Peterson,
yeah, although her case is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that it's like oversaturated.
Yeah,
and everybody knows about the case.
Yeah, Casey Anthony, what's her face, from Arizona. Jodi Arias.
Yeah,
that's a good case though.
That's a really good case.
So I actually was just watching the Chris Watts documentary.
Oh my god, we just watched that.
And I was so tempted to cover that case, and I was like, Amanda, no. Everyone's watching this documentary. Like,
everybody knows about it right now. Like,
yeah.
I hate that case because he's a disgusting garbage human.
Hate him. I legit hate him.
I hate him. And, like, I hate his parents. Well, his mother, specifically. His mother's a bitch. So, yeah. Cindy, fuck you.
Fun fact about Chris, though. He is actually supposedly friends with Tyler Hadley in prison. They do like Bible study together. I found that out when I did the Tyler Hadley case.
Ew.
Yeah, not surprised.
Ew.
Garbage human. So
you're nasty.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, you're gross. But yeah, so his mom, I was looking at my memories yesterday on Facebook, and his mom was totally victim blaming, trying to blame Shanann for everything. And
yeah.
Okay, so like I said, this case is a pretty big case, just there's a lot that's going into it, so I'm doing my best my research on this and making sure that we have all aspects covered. What?
Can I just tell everyone that you're going to be here to visit me in a few weeks? And I'm so
next week. Next.
Yeah.
Wait. Yeah. Next week. You're listening to this week. So it'll be next week.
I'm so excited.
I am so excited.
Okay.
Great.
Go on. Back to the podcast.
So, there's a big podcast and a big movement on this case because it is technically still an active case. There's a podcast called Culpable Podcast. So I highly encourage you, if you are interested in learning more about this case. I'm literally trying to keep this as high level as possible on our end, obviously, because this podcast isn't only about Christian, but there's a lot of really good information in this podcast. So I highly recommend you listen to that podcast. Also, Kendall Ray on YouTube, she did a two-part series on her channel about this case, where she actually got with Christian's parents on this, so I definitely recommend watching her videos as well, and those will be, the links and stuff like that will be in the show notes, so definitely recommend that. But yeah, so let's get into Christian. So Christian Andriacchio was born November 4th, 1992 in Meridian, Mississippi, to parents Todd and Ray Andriacchio. Christian was said to have a very normal childhood. He was really happy. He was wild. He was ambitious. He loved riding his dirt bikes. Apparently, his mom said in an interview that instead of a car for his first vehicle, he wanted a dirt bike. So he had a dirt bike. And I think the podcast, that's
some backwoods shit, man.
It really is. It really is. I love listening to his parents talk. They have this like deep Southern accent. I love it so much. I love her voice. But I guess even in the podcast, the guy that narrates it, he went to the Andriacchio home, and I guess his dirt bike is even set up in his room, like. It is so sad. But yeah, he was very, very close with his parents and his siblings. So he had a younger sister and an older brother. And his younger sister's name was Alexa, and his older brother's name was Josh, I believe. Christian was 21 years old when his life was cut short. Christian was a happy and loyal man. His mother, Ray, described conversations with some of his friends who described him as being the friend that you always knew had your back, and he would always fight for you, especially if you couldn't fight for yourself. He was funny and so incredibly loved. It was nice hearing people talk about him, because he was just like that person who's just like a ray of sunshine in everybody's life. Like, he was funny, he was outgoing, he was a total ladies' man. Like, and he was a handsome guy. He was a really,
I was just gonna say, I just Googled him. He was cute.
He was really cute.
I am one that is like, my goal is to raise a nice human being like that. That is like, yes to his parents. They clearly did
something. I think you should reach out to Ray and ask for pointers.
Help.
Help Ray. Ray.
The other thing is why is it always like the nice people that get murdered? Like, why aren't we killing people bad people?
Right. People take advantage of the nice people, and it's really sad. But he was everybody. Literally nobody had a bad story about Christian. Everybody loved him. At 18 years old, he actually started working on a tugboat, which he absolutely loved. His dream in life was to become the youngest tugboat captain within his company, Magnolia Marine, and was said to actually be on that track.
What do tugboats do?
Fuck if I know. Fishing, maybe?
Okay.
Fishing is my guess. I have no idea.
What do you catch?
Let's see. Let's go. Google Magnolia Marine.
I just picture like Forrest Gump and Captain Dan out there.
Oh, petroleum transport.
Oh, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah,
they aren't catching fish. I mean, like, that's great for you, Christian.
It's great for the fish.
Yeah.
But yeah, he loved his job. And he was very, like, I mean, at 18, he started working there, and he, by 21, he had already moved up like 3 times.
Dang.
Yeah.
Hard worker.
Very, very hard worker. He had been, I think his family members had actually worked on the boat, which he would go with them, from a young age, like learn about too. So it was really cool. Christian was said to be like super kind and helpful to new employees, and always willing to help them instead of letting them fail, which I feel like is a typical, especially in a job like this. They're just like, okay, well, I have to do my job and you need to learn yours, you know what I mean? And Christian was not that. He was just very, very helpful and willing to uplift other people, which I love about him. By the time he did turn 21, he had still been working there and was making really, really good money. Like, he had a couple of cars, a couple bikes. He was essentially able to buy whatever he wanted and live very comfortably.
Goals.
Literally, he lived his best life. In Meridian, Mississippi, where Christian and his family lived, it was a super small town, a town where essentially everybody knew everybody's business. But again, super small town. through most of his high school career and a few years after, he was dating this girl named Avery. They were said to have been this perfect couple. They were very much in love. Their families got along. They liked one another. In the podcast, they did an interview with Avery's dad, and the dad said that Christian really dated the whole family. Like, he would walk in the house, pick up the baby. I guess they had like a little baby, and he would just tote this baby around. The baby loved Christian. He would go fishing with Avery's dad. Like, he was literally dating the whole family. And I love listening to Avery talk about Christian, because she gets all giddy when she talks about him. Like, they were just perfection, honestly. But after high school ended, they continued trying with their relationship, but they ultimately did decide to go their separate ways, as Avery was in veterinary school and Christian was working on the tugboat, which requires like 30 day at a time hitches. So he'd be gone 30 days. She's in school, didn't leave too much time for each other. So it was an amicable breakup. Like, they just decided to go their separate ways, but it was like somewhat of an unsaid understanding. And everybody around them knew that eventually, when the time was right, they'd be back together. Kind of like right person, wrong time. But
that makes me so sad.
I know. Like, they had pictures in each other, like, each other's parents had pictures of one another, like, hanging in their house. Like they were literally perfect.
That's adorable. I just want to say, like, me and my husband have been together over like a decade and like still only have a couple pictures in the house.
I have no pictures hanging on my wall.
Oh, no. Like, I have zero pictures hanging on my wall. I'm talking about my in-laws. They have lots of pictures, but like still only like a couple pictures.
I don't even think that they have pictures of me. And, but to be honest, we don't really have that many pictures together. So that there's also that.
Clearly, they're not a fan of you.
They're not. They hate me. It's okay. Just kidding. I love my in-laws. They're
I do too. It's so funny when people are like, oh, you're going to in-laws. I'm like, yeah, I'm so excited. Like, I love my in-laws.
See, Kevin and I talk about that a lot. Cause I'm like, people in like mom groups and stuff like that are always bitching about their in-laws and, or their mother-in-law. And I'm like, I love my mother-in-law. I love my in-laws. Like, I love all of them, and I love all of their kids. And I am grateful to have married into a family mm-hmm. who has been so accepting of us.
Yeah. I talk to my mother-in-law just as much as I talk to my mom.
Yes. I think we talk to my, I think we FaceTime my mother-in-law at least every day. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Obviously that's Maddie's doing, but like, we talk to them all the time. Like, I love them. And I feel sad for people that don't get that relationship, because it's very, I can't imagine not getting along with my in-laws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyways, off my high horse. So about 6 months later, after Avery and Christian broke up in 2014, Christian began dating a 17-year-old girl, Whitley. Whitley was...
He was 21?
He was 21.
Okay.
She was 17. Whitley was interesting. She was always telling people about her childhood, that it was extremely difficult and her home was just not stable. Christian and his parents decided to take Whitley in and make sure that she was taken care of. Christian was just that type of person to make, just like want to like make sure people were safe. And I think that that's what he looked for in Whitley. At first, Whitley was quiet and laid back, but that very quickly changed. Within a month, Christian's parents had actually already kicked Whitley out of their house. Whitley was not okay. She did not care about anything or consequences of her actions, nothing. She was very jealous of everything. So Christian's little sister Alexa, who
is, she's 17, of course she is, like, she sounds like a horrible teenager.
She was, she still is. Anyways, so Christian's little sister Alexa, who he was super close with at the time, and at the time Whitley was living in the house, she was about 13. Whitley, again, was super jealous of the relationship that Christian had with his sister, which is fucking weird, but she was. At some point, she began starting to try and get Alexa in trouble, like to try and drive this wedge between Alexa and Christian. I guess Christian called his mom one day and was like, hey, where is Alexa? What is she doing? Whitley just saw her smoking. Like, you need to go and get her. And Ray was like, dude, no, she's upstairs in her room. What are you talking about? And she was like, oh, and Christian was like, oh, well, Whitley just called me and told me that she saw her like smoking on the corner of the street or something like that. So like, this was like a constant thing for like no reason.
Ew.
It's really gross. Whitley also had a major issue with the fact that Christian and his family still loved his ex-girlfriend Avery. Whitley at one point,
I hate her. You don't even know.
Whitley at one point walked into Ray and Todd's room, and Ray was just like laying in her bed, and Whitley hands Ray a photo of I think it was like a photo of Whitley and Christian that Ray had in her room. And says, this is what I think of this. And it was a photo, like I said, it was that photo of Christian and his ex-girlfriend. Whitley had said that she took it shooting and shot a hole through Avery's face. Now, Ray wasn't sure if like she had actually shot it. She said that she shot it, but she wasn't sure if like she like stabbed a hole through Avery's face. But there was a hole through Avery's face.
This is before she got kicked out?
Yeah. So yeah, she had already been, it was only a month. She was only there for about a month and she was kicked out. So while Christian was at work, he had an incident where he had fallen overboard, and which is, so obviously that's a very dangerous job, right? So he had fallen overboard and was kind of scared. So, but when he came back, he mentioned to his parents that he thought he should add Whitley to his life insurance policy.
Add your 17-year-old 1-month-long relationship girlfriend to your life insurance?
We'll get there. He was considering adding her to the life insurance policy because of that incident. So he was scared and whatever. Apparently Whitley had found out a couple of things and encouraged this. One,
she has no bills. She has no bills. Life insurance is for like bills and shit. She had no bills. She's okay.
She likes money. That's all it is. So yeah, she found out a couple of different things. One, the incident of him falling overboard. Two, the life insurance policy, and the fact that his ex-girlfriend Avery and his mother Ray were listed on the policy as the beneficiaries. So,
okay. I hate that I'm about to say this, but I need to say it.
Say it.
Why is he adding his girlfriends to his life insurance policies, like, all willy-nilly?
Well, Avery and him were together for a very long time, and she wanted to make sure that, he wanted to make sure that my guess is that she was taken care of. You know what I mean?
I get it. I do, but like.
And he's a young kid too at the time. I mean, he's only 21.
I didn't add started my working until I was married, even though we were cohabitating.
Same. But they were young. I think when he started working, he was only 18. So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that she was listed.
I mean, yeah, but, like, as a military spouse, like, I just don't, like, I don't even think I was added to Chris's till, no, we weren't married yet. We were engaged, but, like,
yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Christian.
Sorry. So Whitley texts him and is like, yeah, I think you need to add me to that instead, because what's going to happen to me and the baby if something happens to you?
There's a baby? Is she pregnant? Is she lying?
No, there was a moment where her period was late and they thought that she was pregnant, but then her period came and she was never pregnant. And so basically it turned into, okay, well, what if I was, and what would happen to me if I was gone? So that's where Christian's thought process came from. Which is still bullshit, because there was no baby or anything.
The parents clearly would have taken care of the baby. Like,
100%.
Your spoiled ass at 17, like, they would have taken care of the baby.
Right. So when Christian's parents kicked Whitley out, Christian left also. They ended up moving into an apartment with Christian's brother.
Was Christian upset about it?
Yeah, I think that he was upset over it, but
understood.
Yeah, and but wanted, so I think it was still one of those things, like, he wanted to make sure that she was okay and taken care of, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Whitley was just a shit person, let's call it what it is. Her friends later talked shit about her also. They called her manipulative, sneaky, a cheater, basically nothing good. And their Christian and Whitley's relationship just sucked because she was essentially just using Christian. Like, it is what it sounded like. He would be, with working on the tugboat, Christian would be gone for a month or so at a time. During those month-long trips, Whitley would immediately go out, start partying, doing drugs, cheating on Christian, all while using Christian's money and Christian's vehicles. Christian was always trying to see the best in her and tried to help her out, but was getting fed up. He told her that he would leave her if she failed another drug test. And there was actually one point where...
why was she taking drug tests?
Well, he told her that he would leave her if she failed a drug test. Like, he was going to give her a drug test.
Oh.
Yeah, so what happened was, is there was one point where Christian was on the boat, but Josh, his brother, was home. And she had been out doing whatever. And Christian called Josh and was like, hey, when she comes home, like, I'm fed up with this bullshit. Like, you know what I mean? And when she comes home, give her a drug test. And if she fails, kick her out. And when Whitley got home, Josh was like, okay, you need to take this drug test. And she was just like, no, like, I'm not going to waste the test because I'm going to fail for, like, marijuana and, like, pills and stuff. So I'm already going to fail. And apparently Josh was like, okay, well, then, like, you need to get out. And I guess she had smooth talked Christian into staying in the relationship, and it was just disgusting.
She looks manipulative.
She is.
Like, you could just tell by looking at her.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. On February 22nd, 2014, Christian was scheduled for another month-long trip on the tugboat. The tugboat that he worked at, he would have had to drive from Meridian to Magnolia Marine, which is about a two-hour drive. Prior to Christian leaving for work, he and Whitley were already having trouble. She had gone out the night before to a party with her family, but he was trying to get her to stay home because he didn't trust her because she was out constantly just partying. When he eventually left, things got so bad that they weren't even on speaking terms. So Christian leaves, goes to work for a few days. And on February 25th, he started receiving frantic phone calls from, I guess, a friend of theirs named Dylan Swearingen, who was kind of like a friend, but he was more like Whitley's friend, who was just kind of like another leech, essentially. He was telling Christian that Whitley was driving around in his BMW and hanging out with apparently a known drug dealer. At this point, Christian is done. He was going to come home, kick Whitley out, go back to work. Just get it done. Cut ties, be done. So he asked Dylan, hey, you know, can you come pick me up? The boat's docking in New Orleans. Come get me. And he was like, you have to be here around 7:45 a.m. the following day on the 26th. Dylan was like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'll come get you. Which, honestly, like, I feel like it's super fucking weird. Let me just talk about this for a second. I feel like it's super fucking weird that Dylan, this random person, essentially, is calling Christian while he's on the boat. Oh, hey, look what Whitley's doing, And I couldn't find anything, and I don't know if there was any type of, like, relationship or friendship beforehand. But it just seems really fucking weird to me that he continues calling to, like, report back on Whitley.
Yeah, definitely skeptical. I am curious about their relationship, though, prior.
Yeah, because from everything that it sounded like, it was kind of one of those things where it was, like, the three of them hanging out. But, like, who does Dylan think he is ratting out? You know what I mean? Like, I thought that was really weird.
Yeah, I mean, like, I wouldn't
rat anyone out unless it was like my best friend and I had the legit proof. Like, I don't.
Right. Like, it's not my fucking business. This is between the two of you. So, anyways, Christian tells his boss then later that there was a family emergency and he has to leave, but that he will be back to the boat by 5 p.m. that night. So Dylan gets there, picks Christian up. They, the boat's docked. Did I say that the boat's docked in New Orleans?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So the boat was docked in New Orleans. And I think, I want to say it was like a 2 or 3 hour drive. So yeah. So they drove from New Orleans, stopped to get gas and straight back to Meridian. They arrived back in Meridian around 11:30 that morning. And from here, what's known about what happened is all up in the air. So at 4:30 p.m., the evening of the 26th, Dylan called 911. He said he found Christian dead and slumped over in the bathtub. The first officer shows up to the scene at 4:45 p.m. and was followed by everybody else. The chief shows up around what?
I'm so confused. This escalated so quickly.
It did.
And all of a sudden, like, we were driving back to break up with our girlfriend, and then he was dead in the bathtub, and this Dylan guy said he found him. Why was Dylan in his room or in his apartment?
So we're gonna go into like what this is just what we know at this point, because everything else is so up in the air.
Cool. Okay. Christian, yeah. Bathtub, slumped over, dead. The chief just got there.
Yes. So the chief shows up about 45 minutes later and was like, nah, this is a suicide. Wrap it up. The investigation of this case at the scene, only 45 minutes.
Why do we think this is a suicide, chief?
So Christian was found in the bathroom of the home. And I want to talk about how his body was found. So yeah,
bathtub, bathroom.
Okay.
That would make sense.
Okay, so whatever. Hold on. I want to show you what the bathroom looked like just so you have point of reference. So when you, it's a very, very small bathroom. When you walk in, immediately to the right is like the vanity, the sink, and like the cabinet area. Right next to it is the toilet, and then immediately straight to the back is the tub. Very, very, very small bathroom.
Mm, yeah, small.
Very, very small. Small? Small? Is it small?
It's very small.
So the way that Christian was laid out, so his arms were outside of the bath, and his head was slumped over into the tub, and his feet were crossed and were about an inch into the entryway of the door, almost leaning on his shoulders. Like, the side was on his shoulders. There was a single bullet wound to his head. The entry was to the right side of his head, just above his ear. And exit wound was almost exactly straight across to the opposite side. The bullet and the casing were both found inside of the bathtub. But there was no damage to the bathtub. There was no indication of anything. They were just inside the bathtub. There was a hole, though, that was directly behind Christian on an electrical outlet. So my guess is that, and it's hard because there was photos that were leaked, but I could not find them. And I was trying to find pictures of the bathroom itself, too. But it's kind of like hit or miss. So my guess is like, so the door is right there, but then there's that the sink and the vanity right to the right. Mm-hmm. My guess is it's the electrical outlet on that wall, that same wall as the door.
Yeah.
So his back is to the door. And there's a hole directly behind Christian on that electrical outlet. However, it's uncertain if it was due to the bullet. There was no actual investigation that took place. But the bullet found does show some type of possible drywall on it. I want to go into how his body was. So his body slumped over, essentially his shoulders, like right here, resting on
The side of the tub.
The side of the tub. But his knees were about 12 inches from the bathtub. So his body was very elongated. And it just...
So he would have been standing.
So, right. And the theory is that he was standing at the tub and shot himself and fell into the tub. However, the gun was found the opposite direction under his left hip between him and the bathtub. Christian was right-handed, so the gun would have been right here. How the fuck did he, and he would have had to been facing the, okay, so it does not make sense. None of this makes sense. Recoil would not allow this. So
this makes no sense.
No sense whatsoever, because the
bullet is, so I'm trying to picture like him falling into the bathtub like butt first, right? Because like that's how I'm picturing. Do you get what I'm saying?
Why would he go butt first into the tub?
Like falling back. Like his legs were out.
Straight. No, so he was in, like chest down.
Chest down.
Yes, hold on. You see that?
Oh.
Yeah, does that make sense? That make more sense? So and it shows you how small.
Yeah. Is that the actual picture?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm trying. I can't find this picture anywhere. That's why I had to pull it from the...
So, let me just describe it for everyone. So, he literally... He is, like, facing the tub.
Yes.
And his head is down, and his collarbones are almost against the outside elongated part of the
tub. It looks like his... So, it looks... And actually, I said that his shoulders were on the tub, but it looks more like his waist...
Yeah.
Is more at the tub.
Like propped up. Like think about giving a child a bath and like
bending leaning over. Yeah. That's a great explanation. And yeah. Then, and his feet are crossed and his arms are outside of the tub.
Like at his waist. Like,
yeah. Side. Yeah. So like, ooh. Yeah.
That's weird. Okay. That's really weird. How would the... That doesn't even make sense. None of that.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't make sense at all. So the thing is if, especially with that hole in the wall, like he would have had to have been facing the back. So the back wall and shot himself on the right for it to go that way. But recoil and the way the bodies fall, he would not have ended up where he was in the tub. He wouldn't have been able to walk or do anything. It just, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, something doesn't add up.
So the gun found at the scene was a 45 Kimber semi-automatic. So with the one shot being shot, the next bullet would have automatically been loaded. However... The gun was found decocked. I don't know a lot about guns. However, with a semi-automatic, you would have to physically decock the gun after it was fired. So Christian's not going to shoot himself, walk a couple of feet, decock the gun, and die. Like, that's not possible.
Yeah.
Literally at all.
And this was not investigated. Oh, just
in the case.
Of shitty policing.
Exactly. Awesome. So in addition to everything not making sense, the crime scene didn't make sense, which I think we agree on. When the first officer arrived on scene, they mentioned that they remember that the blood was extremely coagulated, and the timeline that Dylan ends up giving when he called would have only allowed him to shot himself within the last hour, but the blood would not have looked the way that it did. When the officers left the scene, they didn't take literally anything with them other than the bullet and the casing that was found. They took nothing.
What?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Nothing. So Christian's parents ended up coming to the scene later on, and they found a fucking bloody t-shirt shoved behind the toilet. And they also found a bloody knife in the house. How?
Why would there be a bloody knife?
Right. I have no idea.
Did he have an
autopsy? I say a bloody knife, but it was, I don't know if it was a bloody knife or like knife that they, there was like some blood on it. I'm not too sure.
Sure.
Yes. We'll get into that in a second. So the, obviously when the family finds this, they're like, holy shit. So like they take it to the police and guess what?
They didn't take it.
The police later lost all of it. They lost, quote unquote, lost it. Lost all of this evidence. Once the autopsy was completed, his death was ultimately undetermined and not classified as a suicide. A couple of weird things, though, is that he did have a fracture on the back of his skull and a small wound to the bridge of his nose. The biggest issue that I have over everything is that the autopsy showed lividity on the back of his right leg.
On the back of his leg?
The back.
I'm sorry?
Okay. Yep, the back. So for those that don't know, lividity is like the pooling of blood. So like when you die, you obviously just lay there and it settles due to gravity, just like wherever gravity.
So it doesn't happen when we're alive because our heart is constantly pumping our blood and it's circulating. So when you die, like Taylor said, it pools and it's going to pool. Gravity is going to pull it down
and it
to
like
wherever
solidifies
how you're laying. So you can often tell how someone dies and how they are sitting based on
right
their blood and the lividity of it.
Yep. So there was lividity on the back of his right leg. So let's go back to the scene for a second. Christian was found face down into the tub.
Been lividity on the front of his legs.
There should have been.
Yeah.
But there wasn't. It was on the back of his right leg.
Also, I'm very curious why there wasn't any in like his upper body, because like a lot of him, you know, like the front of his body and the torso area.
Sure.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know this was not a suicide.
No, I don't think so. Despite all of the inconsistencies.
I don't know this for
obviously. You might.
I wasn't there. I'm fairly certain. I would put some money on it.
I would bet my life.
Body was moved. Like this is not.
It's not a suicide.
No.
And even with all of this, the police still did nothing. And they have continued to do nothing.
Not shocked.
Both Dylan and Whitley were questioned, but neither
fuck
of their
Dylan
stories.
Fuck Dylan and Whitley.
Fuck them. But neither of their stories added up, nor did they make any sense.
Let me guess, they're married now or something stupid.
No.
Christian.
All right, Christian. Anyways, so this was going to be two parts, but because of who I am as a person and my lack of basic scheduling, it didn't go out. So it's going to go out in one big episode. So here we are.
Yeah, life is rough, guys.
It's been insane for both of us lately, so.
To say update shortly.
Yeah, literally. But anyways, okay, so both Dylan and Whitley, they were questioned, but neither of their stories were added up, nor do they make any sense.
I just want to reiterate, fuck Whitley.
Fuck a bitch named Whitley.
That's all I got.
Got it. So first we're going to go into Dylan's statement. So Dylan left his house around 3 to 4 to pick up Christian at the dock in New Orleans. On the way back to Meridian with Christian, this is when he says that he first found out that Whitley and Christian were having relationship issues. And then he goes into saying, you know, he told authorities that this is when I found out why he was coming home, which doesn't make any sense because he's the one that called Christian saying that Whitley was cheating and being wild.
Isn't that relationship issues?
I mean, yeah, okay. Slightly.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, right. So he continues to say that, like, when we got to the apartment, they got into an argument immediately. When they got to the apartment, Christian and Whitley got into an argument immediately. Dylan said that, like, he went upstairs and then he hears them screaming and hears Christian saying, "Do you love me?" And he peeks around the corner and he sees a gun to his head.
They were in the bathroom?
No, so my guess is that they were in the living room. He goes up, he goes like upstairs or something. So he was like, oh yeah, then things calmed down and we all sat down and watched a movie.
Okay.
Yeah. What? Right? that was very chaotic, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so then he says that after the movie, he offered to go out and get everyone food and give them some time alone. Dylan said that Christian was like, oh yeah, go get us some Chick-fil-A. Oh, and will you run by the bank for me and pull out all of my money?
Okay. Okay. Well, like, one, Chick-fil-A sounds delicious. But two, seems legit.
Seems Dylan. Sus. But the interesting part is that Christian didn't give Dylan his PIN number. And then, okay, so then he, we'll get into that in a second. So then he was like, I can also take Whitley's phone to get fixed, which apparently had been broken in the argument earlier.
I'm so confused.
Why I know. It's like very, on? Yeah.
What time of the day is this? Like, doesn't he only
this
have
is like, yeah.
He time only, off yeah. his boat thing?
I mean, yeah, they got back to the apartment around 11:30. He was supposed to be back there by 4:30 or 5:30. And
are we talking about AM?
So he got there at 11:30 AM. It had to be back at 4:30 that afternoon. So it literally was not meant to be this long trip. Like, he was going to go home, kick Whitley out, and go back to the boat. Like, he wasn't going to be staying there.
I'm still confused as to why they're watching even a movie. Like, you're only home for 3 hours.
Yeah, considering the drive has got to be like the drive back is going to be like 2 hours.
Yeah,
so like, you watched a movie.
All of this is confusing to me.
Right.
Okay,
so Dylan, so yeah, so he goes and offers to go get her phone fixed that had been broken earlier that day. So Dylan goes to leave and decides to take Christian's gun and hide it behind a curtain.
Stop playing with that. Why are you like this?
I'm sorry. Why? What am I doing?
Oh,
shit.
Shut up. You're not plugged in. I mean, it doesn't sound horrible.
I'm not plugged in. Oh, and I'm sitting here fucking with it. Jesus Christ.
I remember my first podcast, too.
Okay, is that better?
Great for you to join us. Yeah, that does sound really good, actually.
Fuck! Now I'm...
Oh. All right. It's fine. Sorry for the shitty audio.
I'm sorry. Prior. Look.
Taylor doesn't know how to podcast yet.
I don't know how to podcast. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm so sorry, you guys. But I don't love you enough to re-record that, so here we are.
Same. It's 10:30.
We have things to do, like to go to sleep. Anyway, so then Dylan is later shown on the security camera footage trying to withdraw all of Christian's money. This footage, though, is time stamped an hour after they supposedly got back to the apartment.
I'm also really confused as to how he thinks he could get money out without a PIN.
Right.
You think you're just gonna guess it?
Yeah, so he wasn't able to get anything out of Christian's account, obviously. But instead of calling Christian to be like, hey, dude, I'm here. What's your PIN so I can get that money, all of your money that you asked me to get out of your account? He calls some random friend who worked at the bank. And the friend was like, dude, what? No, I can't help you. Like, go. Are you serious?
Christian was already dead.
That's my theory as well. But we'll get into that. He says that then he went to Chick-fil-A and went home, and then they watched another movie.
Wait, thing. So this was only timestamped for an hour after they would have gotten home.
And it's 24 minutes to get to the bank.
What did they watch? A porno movie? Like, what kind of movies are this short?
Are these short films? Like, I have no idea. No idea. So from here, Christian and Whitley, Dylan, I'm sorry. So from here, Dylan says that Christian and Whitley decided to go for a drive to talk about things, and Dylan went to take a 2-hour nap. So when
he's just getting better.
I know, it's laughable. It's terrible. So when he woke up, Whitley was asleep in the other room and Christian was downstairs smoking. Dylan was like, well, I'm going to go look at some speakers at Best Buy. I'll be right back.
This sounds like it's like a whole day and we are like within
hours.
Take a 2-hour nap?
Like that's what I'm saying. Like,
what?
None of this makes sense. So before he leaves, though, to go look at speakers at Best Buy, he decides to give Christian his gun back. And he unloads it and is like, hey, don't mess with this. Like, legit. Mm-hmm. And why would he give it back? Like, he said later in his interview that, like, oh, I couldn't take it with me. What? Okay. All right, well, that's that. So he goes to Best Buy.
I hate him.
I know. So he goes to Best Buy, speaks with some employee about some equipment, which later I believe there was somebody that confirmed, but there was nothing supporting it. Don't quote me on that because I feel like I only read that in one place. When Dylan got back to the house, he says he didn't see anyone, so he starts calling out for Whitley and Christian, and from the bottom of the stairs he sees a light in the bathroom and assumed Christian was taking a shower. So he goes to the bathroom door, he knocks and says, are you all right? And got no answer. So he says that he goes downstairs to where Whitley was sleeping, wakes her up and says, hey, Christian isn't answering me. We need to make sure that he's all right. So they go back upstairs again and they're like, hey, or he's like, hey, are you okay? Still get no response. He says he then opened the door and found Christian in the bathroom face down in the tub in a puddle of blood.
And Whitley slept through a gunshot sound?
We'll get there. We'll get there. There would have been no way the door was even closed. His feet were an inch into the path of the doorway when he was found. So let's just keep that in mind. So then he says that Whitley came, and I'm sorry, I said that him and Whitley went upstairs to find Christian, but apparently he says that Whitley was still downstairs, and so Whitley comes upstairs and is holding Christian, crying, screaming while he calls 911. So let's just put out there that this timeline makes zero sense. So it doesn't leave room for literally anything, considering they got back to the apartment again at 11:30. Christian had to be back to the boat by 5 p.m.
They clearly don't know how time works.
Which he would have at least had to leave by 3 p.m. to make it back in time. So you either watched a movie or took a nap. Like, there's no time for two movies, which is easily 4 hours right there, plus another
Chick-fil-A,
the naps. Bank. Right, exactly. It doesn't make any sense. So that was
looking at speakers. Like, what looking, is this?
Right, exactly. Like, you could just been like,
that is a whole day's worth of things. Yeah, even more than, I mean, my
that's more than that. I probably would not have done that. In a day, to Chick-fil-A, be honest.
For sure.
But always an option. So now we're going to go into Whitley's statement. So in her statement.
In her statement, Whitley.
So she mainly goes on and on about their relationship and how Christian doesn't trust her and how she was thinking of breaking up with him, but then she decided that they could probably make it work.
Her boyfriend just fucking died and she's there talking about the relationship.
Yep.
Not about like the events leading up to his death.
Right. She says that she called him the night before and Christian said that he was quitting his job and coming home. Let's just add in here. Let me just butt in. There's absolutely no way. Christian would never. I don't even know this kid and he would never.
He loved his job.
He loved to, by every account of every person. Like, I could not find one bad thing about this kid, which I'm sure that it, you know, it's out there. Everybody has their moments. But like, when it came to his job and him as a person, like, there was nothing. There was no way he would ever just quit his job.
He was 21 and he was getting promoted and he was clearly wanting to do things right. in that career. Why would he quit because of some bitty named Whitley?
Right, exactly. Exactly. She said that she didn't recall any times or anything specifics, no arguments, no Christian putting a gun to his head, nothing. Like, she didn't remember that. She says that Christian wanted to go for a drive to Bonita, which I, from what I gathered, is like a recreational center, like a park, stuff like that. It's about 5-minute drive away. So Christian wanted to go there and talk. She said that Christian was telling her that between her and his mom, he couldn't make anybody happy. From here, her statement kind of just jumps like back and forth. They're back at the house. She lays down with the dog, takes a nap, and she's later woken up by Dylan. She went upstairs and saw Christian in the bathroom. When she was later asked by authorities if Christian...
Wait. So her and the dog slept through a gunshot?
Right.
Okay. So,
mm-hmm. Want to clarify. Yep. Mm-hmm. When later asked by authorities if Christian had made any indication to like wanting to hurt himself, she said, no, I don't think so. Although there were text messages between the two of them that says otherwise. And this is an instance about them in an argument and putting a gun to his head. Like, what about Dylan's entire statement?
Wait, so there were text message proof that he did?
Yeah, so there were, like, text messages. Like, his entire, this poor kid, and their poor family, honestly. So there was, all of Christian's text logs were released. And people just ate them up. Like, I don't think Christian wanted to hurt himself at the end of the day. I don't believe that. However, there were text messages out there about him not talking about it, but like
insinuating
something. Yeah. There were text messages out there. I don't want to read them because they are explicit. And I don't think they add anything to this, because at the end of the day, I don't believe Christian killed himself. So if you want to go out there, you can probably search for them. But it was basically Christian. All I'm going to say is basically Christian alluding to the fact that he would potentially hurt himself if she cheated on him again.
If there is a suicide in question, which I don't even know if this is a suicide in question. I think that could be used in something.
For sure.
Like I said, I don't know if this is not necessarily a suicide in question, just because of how the body was found and the gun. All of the physical evidence don't necessarily scream suicide, but
none of the physical evidence says suicide. And not only that, but my issue with these text messages is that they were explicit enough for anybody to remember somebody saying that to them, and for her to be asked if he ever said anything like that, and she was like, "Nah, I don't think so." Like,
well, that, but he also, no, and I don't want to taint his character at all, but he also threatened harm on other people as well. And
sure,
does that mean that he should be suspected in any murder that happened in a 5-mile radius of him? No.
Oh my God, no, absolutely not. But yeah, so it's definitely something to keep in mind, but I don't know that those text messages,
I don't believe they will anyway, opinion.
Not in my opinion at all. So the last thing that Whitley said in her interview was that she never heard a gunshot, nor does she recall her dog reacting to a gunshot. So
was her dog deaf?
That's what I'm saying, because my dogs would have gone ape shit. I know later on in the investigation, and I use that word very loosely, she did mention that she was on pills. So but I still feel like you would react to something like that. That's not like a quiet sound, especially within a house.
Still don't think you would sleep through it. Never necessarily done pills, but you know,
not my jam. So she said that she was later woken up by Dylan, and she went upstairs and saw Christian in the bathroom.
Was Dylan like jumping on her? Like, she clearly can't get woken up by a gunshot.
That's what I'm saying. So like, and that's in Kendall Ray, she has a Mile Higher podcast, but she also has her YouTube channel. She covered this case on her YouTube channel, and she was doing an interview with, like, I think the family attorney or one of the family attorneys or something like that. And she had mentioned, okay, so a gunshot doesn't wake you up, but Dylan coming in saying, hey, wake up, wakes you up. Like, there's a problem here. So I want to jump back to the crime scene for a little bit. On the day that Christian was found, all three, Christian, Whitley, and Dylan, had a GSR test done, a gunshot residue test. Whitley immediately tells authorities, oh, mine will come back positive, just so you know. And they were like, excuse me, why? And she says that she was out the night before with Matt Miller and his cousin Jet shooting guns. Like, okay, so this isn't like out of the norm for somebody to go shooting. Like, I did it with my family as a child. Like, it's not normal. But the residue only stays on your hand for about 4 to 6 hours. And that's if you don't touch anything, don't wash your hands or anything like that. And this happens when you shoot a gun. Let's just keep that in mind. So
that was going to be, you just read my mind. That's what I was just going to say. Is that, like, come on.
So like, are you just nasty and you didn't wash your hands at all?
Or? But like, this is fucking what, 5, 6 in the afternoon?
Right.
At this time, at least. So earliest that you could have shot this gun, or latest rather, is at what, noon that day?
Noon, 1 o'clock.
Similar-ish time that Christian got home. So I'm assuming that her test was positive.
Right. Both Dylan and Whitley's GSR test came back as positive. So she has an excuse, but for everything that I could find doesn't really say anything about why Dylan's came back positive.
Also, there was only one gunshot, correct?
Right.
So,
I mean, unless they're handling the gun each other right after it happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Matt Miller came out and said that he knew Whitley, but like, it wasn't really an actual friendship until a couple days before Christian's death, when she reached out to him via Snapchat. He asked if she was still with Christian, and Whitley told Matt no, he has another girlfriend, so they decided to go hang out and shoot guns. Matt says that she never shot a gun because she was way too scared. He says that she was sitting on his lap the whole time, covering her ears because of the sound. He says that they slept together and went back to Christian's house. Yeah, of course they did.
And then they went back to Christian's
house. Yep. Mm-hmm.
This girl's dirty.
Yeah. However, though, Jet says that Whitley did shoot a gun, so it's kind of nobody's sure what happened for sure. I know stories have changed a couple of times, so I don't know. And it's possible this crowd was very much into drugs and alcohol, so it's possible that like nobody remembers. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, they're kids. If they're like, yo, tell them I shot a gun, I bet half of them wouldn't blink an eye and just say, yeah, she shot a gun.
Right. Or, exactly. You
know, like,
they don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to be. Yeah, I totally get that. So Matt has an alibi or had an alibi. And later that night he got a call from his cousin asking if he had heard that Christian had committed suicide. So Matt calls Whitley immediately, but she doesn't answer her phone, but her phone was broken, so that's not super weird. So Matt decides to call one of Whitley's friends, and the friend says that Whitley said that Christian had found out that Whitley was with Matt and Jet the night before, and then is saying that they did the driving around to talk and went back to the house and then went to sleep with Christian and or I'm sorry, she went to sleep with Christian, and she found herself woke up to a gunshot, and she found Christian dead in the bathroom with a bullet to his throat.
He wasn't shot in the throat.
Right. So her story is changing. However, she's never given another version to police that I'm aware of. So Matt just decides to like stay away from her. She continued to try and contact him, and he finally contacts her about the contradictory statements. So Matt's like, did you find him like you told me, or did Dylan find him like you told the police? And Whitley was like, oh no, Dylan found him, and that she didn't wake up to any gunshots. Then she says that she never said he saw a shot. I'm sorry. Then she says that she never saw a shot in his throat, and it was in his head. Also tells him that he threatened to kill himself earlier that day. But
I'm sorry, Whitley, did he threaten to kill himself ever or harm himself or no? Because
right.
This is a yes or no answer.
It's a very chaotic situation, because what it sounds like is they had time to get their story straight with each other, which there is no straight story here, because Dylan has a whole fucking day planned out, like, of chaos. It doesn't make sense. So Whitley had been calling Matt throughout the day of the 26th, asking him to come and pick her up because they were fighting. After Christian's death, she had his phone the entire time, even when she went to be questioned by police, and refused to give it to police. Finally, they were able to get the phone. Phone records show that when they were supposedly asleep, like 6 calls were made from Christian's phone to Matt Miller's phone. Huh. I just want to point out, like, there is no way, like, Christian knew she was sleeping with this guy. There is no reason why he would be okay with her calling him from his phone. Like, I don't know. So
when he was dead, he didn't have a say in it.
Right, exactly. Something to mention about the text messages, though, from Christian, the ones talking about suicide. It's just important to mention that this was around the time where you could actually jailbreak iPhones. And Dylan was actually the person everyone went to do this for their phones. So you could jailbreak it to say one thing or another. You could change how it looks to somebody else. And I believe Christian actually had the version of the iPhone where you didn't even have to jailbreak it, and you could actually just change text messages and who they came from and what outgoing text messages said. So something to keep in mind. But I don't know how much weight, if any, that holds, but do with that information again what you will.
I'm curious how much research they did on the text messages and the metadata that was in the phone.
They didn't. That's the thing. That's the problem here, is I feel like this could easily be solved.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean?
There's so much metadata in the phone that, like,
so much
that could have easily been figured out if it was jailbroken or if that was a case of changing data.
Right.
When was this again? What years was this?
2014.
Okay. I mean, that they for sure could have found out a lot of things, I'm not gonna go into details, and honestly, I don't know how they would have necessarily done it per se, but as someone with a master's degree in information security computer forensics, I do know it is possible to do these things.
Right, right.
So they could have done. They could have done more research if they have not. So
I agree. So it's something else I want to mention. Like, it's totally not proven, but said through the grapevine that Whitley and Dylan actually had some sort of relationship, and she apparently stayed with him a few times. So I don't know if this was
I'm just going to say, in the court of Amanda, she did, because that bitch a hoe. And there is no way that Dylan is so invested on Whitley's side of it.
Exactly.
To get her and Christian not together.
Get some ass. and steal like, some money. Like, they're both garbage gonna, people.
Yeah, but why is she going to pretend to, like, why is he going to pretend to be like, hey, man, like, she's cheating on you, blah, blah, blah. And
then, right, that makes no sense to me. Like, leave, this isn't your relationship. Why are you butting in? That's fucking weird.
And, like, it didn't seem like they had much of a, like, a friendship prior, so it's just.
It's weird.
Shady, yeah.
Very shady.
So the court has ruled.
The court has ruled. I also wanted to mention that Christian kept a lockbox of cash and important items, like a gun, and it happened to be in the car while he was working. So something to mention, you, while working on the boat, you're unable to access your vehicle. It's in a secured lot in Vicksburg where the marine is. However, Christian's vehicle was moved between the hours of 2 a.m. and 7 a.m. Wasn't Christian because he was on the boat, but his lockbox is missing. It was said to hold about $7,000, a gun, and I think some other things. But nobody knows if this was the same gun that was found with Christian.
So,
and there were no cameras over the lot, so we don't know who moved the car.
Okay, so I'm assuming that you're not going to have these answers just because this might be a little particular, but do we know who had keys to his vehicle other than him?
I have no idea. I think just okay. His mom.
That's what I would assume. And Whitley lived there, so she, or at some point she did, or she probably could have fucking stole it.
Unless he left it unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what access is required.
Sure. We don't know what kind of gun was in, at minimum, like the kind of gun, anything like that. Do we even know that there was for sure a gun in there? Like, or is that just through the grapevine?
That's just what a lot of information said, that there was a gun in there. Like, he kept a gun in this lockbox in his car. So,
okay. So without this information of this other gun, do we know anything about the gun that he used to kill himself, like where he would have gotten it? Was it kept in his house? Did anyone ever know anything about it prior to all of a sudden he committed suicide with it? Nope. And I used
it. I mean, it wasn't out of the norm for him to have guns.
Mm-hmm.
So aside from that, I don't have that information.
Okay.
Yeah. So at 4:57 a.m., Dylan tweeted, Meridian to New Orleans to Vicksburg and back to Meridian all before lunch. But we know that they didn't go to Vicksburg. So is it possible that he went before picking Christian up and that was how he got the gun from his truck? Because I feel like Whitley would have known that that was in there.
So wait, Vicksburg is where his car was, his truck was, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Huh.
Shady.
Yeah.
Also,
what a dumbass.
Seriously. These people are stupid. I'm glad you're dumb. They're big dumb.
Thanks, dumb, dumb, Dylan, dumb.
So I want to go back to the life insurance thing also for a moment. Apparently, Dylan went to see Christian's grandfather after he had died and asked him when the life insurance policy was going to pay out because Whitley needed a car and because she didn't have Christian's anymore.
I am so confused. One, why is Dylan going to see Christian's grandfather?
These people are fucking, they've got fucking
balls.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I'd shoot you on principle for coming up to me for asking me such a stupid fucking question.
Two, wait, did he ever change
it? No, he never did. He never did. But I think that they thought that he
did. Oh, I bet they thought 100%.
100%, yeah.
I bet that she thought that, I wonder if he was going to. I'm curious. If like that was the plan and she probably assumed that it already
happened. That's my best guess, honestly. Like, I think that that's a really good guess. But who knows? Who knows? Yeah.
Hope you're walking everywhere, Whitley.
Yeah. So I kind of want to talk now about, I'm like all over the place and I'm sorry. I just want to make sure that I get information and then we kind of touch on a little bit more things. So I kind of want to talk about like the forensics and stuff like that. When officials arrived at the scene, Christian was in full rigor.
We talked about this.
Yes. And I think
we talked about the validity of his blood.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about him being in rigor.
Yeah, he was in full rigor. Full ass rigor, which
Why?
And there was also
when was this? I need to know the time frame. Like what time of the year was this?
Time of the year. I want to say
I'm assuming they would have AC.
February.
Oh. So rigor takes a few hours, anywhere to 6 hours to set in, depending on the body and like temperatures and everything. But if they would have called,
apparently they got there. I think they called 911 at like 4:30.
So he would have been dead at minimum at like 2:30 ish. At the
that's like 2 hours.
Yeah. That's obviously just a rough estimate. All of this
shit
has so much dependencies of body
the conditions. Yeah, the for conditions, sure.
Everything. Okay, not that I think that this happened. Let me preface this with that. But if Whitley really was sleeping and Dylan was out, the 2-hour-ish time frame could potentially maybe make sense because of the rigor. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was 1 hour, 45 minutes. By the time they called 911, figured their shit out and got there to start investigating, like rigor, I guess, in theory of that timeline could have maybe made sense. I don't want to make sense of this, but that's just kind of where my brain went for the timeline.
For sure. For sure.
Does that make sense? Did I explain mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Obviously dependent on the actual circumstances.
Yeah, but that's assuming that they're telling the truth, which I don't believe that's what happened, but
yeah, for sure. No, like the science makes sense for sure. So there was also no blood splatter from a gunshot, nothing on the walls. There was nothing there. Christian apparently killed himself and there was no blood splatter.
Interesting.
Officials actually had to, so he was in such full rigor that they had to lift his body, they said about 18 inches because of how he was placed in the tub itself, just in order to get him out. The Andriacchios later hired independent experts to look at the forensics involved. They hired Michael Knox, I think was Knox and Associates. They went back to the bathroom afterwards. They used luminol and they did find blood where they would have expected it, but also on the ceiling and places on the door that would have been impossible if the door was closed, like Dylan said. So there was blood on the outside of the door.
Fun fact about luminol.
I'm
not saying this is what happened there because it's a bathroom, but things like onions can trigger like luminol as well.
That's really cool.
Yeah. This is something with the compound in it, and obviously it's not going to be a similar pattern and et cetera of blood. But like for example, I cut an onion and if it touched like my counter or something and I did not wipe it off accordingly properly and
yeah,
luminol was sprayed in a certain amount of time, like it could test positive for it would light up, I guess.
It would light up, right. Okay. That's insane. I didn't know that.
Blood is not the only thing that will light up luminol, although that is obviously the majority.
The biggest. Yeah. Sure. Cool. So the bullet hole in the wall that they found wouldn't have been possible either. Where Christian's body was placed, the hole was directly behind Christian, which I think we talked about. Another forensic pathologist reviewed the autopsy report and did confirm that this was a staged death and believes it was a homicide, not a suicide. Christian's case file and autopsy reports were released by officials without consent of his parents for seemingly no reason. I think it was like a political move, maybe.
Of course it was.
Yeah. The Andriacchios filed a suit against the chief admin officer, Richie McAllister. The lawsuit stated that McAllister, quote, on information and belief, obtained a copy of the investigative file through a source other than the Attorney General's office, and that he would invite people to visit his office to see the autopsy reports, and that were then analyzed by McAllister and led him to conclude that Andreacchio took his own life. So basically, this guy was showing off Christian's case like a fucking trophy. Is disgusting, but
this is exactly who we want in these positions.
Definitely, awesome, 100%. A few years later, after Christian's death, the police chief was actually finally removed due to, quote, conduct unbecoming of an officer, and replaced. The Andreacchios were super hopeful that, you know, someone's finally going to get in, take their son's death seriously, seek justice. But the new police chief acknowledged this wasn't a suicide and actually placed a warrant out for Whitley and Dylan for murder. However, the new chief asked for the charges to be reduced to manslaughter with culpable negligence, saying that they didn't have enough evidence. Ultimately, the grand jury decided against pressing charges against the two. Both the judge and the family just declined the offer to reduce charges, so neither of them have been arrested. Whitley and Dylan have continued to essentially harass the Andreacchios on social media and taunt them with the fact that there is nothing linking them to the crime. Most recently, earlier this year, Jett Miller and Whitley filed a lawsuit against the Andreacchios and the Culpable podcast, claiming false accusations and defamatory statements alleging that they had something to do with Christian's death. Whitley,
I'm talking to you. Are you mad because you didn't get any life insurance money and you had to kill someone for it? Or
yikes.
Like, what's up?
What's up, girl? Ray, Christian's mom, is super vocal online for Christian's case and has pushed for local law enforcement to move forward for a fair trial, regardless of the constant pushback from law enforcement. I will include in our like social media posts a link to a campaign that Ray has started to encourage the Department of Justice to reopen Christian's case. This petition was originally to be signed quickly within a few months after it was first started, but it's still taking signatures. So I definitely encourage you to sign it if you want to. I signed it a while ago. It was one of those things where we have to get so many signatures by this date in order for it to be heard or whatever, but it is still taking signatures. So, I mean, it doesn't hurt to have it, but ultimately, I mean, we have no idea what happened to this day. And it's important to note, though, that all people are innocent until proven guilty. So this is just the information I was able to find on it. I highly recommend you checking out the Culpable podcast as well as Kendall Ray on YouTube. There's also a True Crime Daily 5-episode video on it. So definitely check that stuff out. But yeah,
that's heavy. I do want to say, and I don't want to take light away from Christian or his case, but some of these unspeakable things that we just talked about with politicizing his death. We do have an election coming up here in the United States, local elections all the way up to presidential, and your vote matters regardless of the way you're voting or whatever. Just please vote locally. These things, we're putting these people into office, and this is just the importance of voting. You know,
absolutely, some
of these people could have been potentially handling these things incorrectly or swaying people to handle them incorrectly, and in local voters could have put them into office. So
absolutely,
our election is what, the 23 days away, I think. I don't know. I something just heard like that when I was watching the Amy thing, bullshit thing today. Just please vote. I can't stress that enough.
You can check your local law enforcement, see your local department, because my state where I live has extended voter registration. So if you're not registered to vote, also, if you're not registered to vote and you go to vote, I believe, again, check with your state. I saw somewhere that you can actually register to vote when you go to vote. So, I mean, there are ways to do it. Just do it. Your vote matters. And just fucking vote.
Yeah. Especially, I'm going to call out women and people of color, because
absolutely,
it hasn't always been our right. And obviously, I want everyone to vote, regardless of who you are. But women and people of color had to fight for that right. So
exercise your rights.
And in some places, you can vote for sheriff and some of these people who are investigating these crimes. And this is the importance of it. I mean, absolutely, obviously, it goes all the way up to as high as it can go and down. But it's just super important. And I'm going to get off my high horse now. And yeah.
Please vote. Just add it in there 300 times.
Even if you're not in the US, just vote. Link
it. Vote. It's fine. It's fine. All right. Thanks, guys.
Peace. We hope you join us every Monday for our weekly episode. And as an added bonus, we've deemed the first Sunday of every month as Serial Killer Sunday. So you can look forward to an extra long episode about our favorite serial killers once a month.
Go follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Naptime Investigations or Twitter at Naptime_podcast. If you want us to cover one of your favorite cases, please send over your case suggestions via email at naptimeinvestigations@gmail.com, or there is a link in our Instagram bio.
As always, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and thanks for joining this party.
Bye.
Bam.